HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Patrick Gallen. Patrick is People and Change Consulting Partner at Grant Thornton. Patrick, you're very welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Declan. Delighted to be here and looking forward to our conversation.
Great stuff. So, Patrick, maybe just as a starter, do you want to just explain what you do and what your section of Grant Thornton do?
Yes. Well, I joined Grant Thornton in 2018 to set up a people and change practice in Ireland, having transferred from a large big four. And I suppose my journey into people and change is a little bit different because I started off as a chartered accountant, spent 10 years in audit and accounting, and then moved into people. And that was my passion. So having worked in a big four, mainly out of London and globally, Grant Thornton were setting up a people and change business. And they asked me to come in, set it up and lead it. And so that's nearly 4 years. We've grown and developed the business on an all-Ireland basis. And we cover everything from learning and development, leadership alignment, HR consulting, strategic workforce planning, board effectiveness, culture measurement. And as you would expect, particularly over the last 12 to 18 months, we've been doing a lot of work around remote hybrid working, looking at organizations and working with them and how they transition into this new world of work.
Someone remarked to me recently that we, the nature of how we work has never changed so fast. Where do you think we are now, or what are you experiencing, or what's the feedback you're taking from your clients?
Yes, I would agree. I think it's been a perfect storm for a people and change practitioner. And I think where we are, a lot of organizations, not just in Ireland, were getting ready to transition back to the workplace. Certainly in the early autumn over the summer. And there've been a number of false starts before that. But I think where we are basically is around the fact is that hybrid working, blended working is here to stay. That experiment over the first 12 months of the pandemic showed that actually we could transition where possible to, and that's roughly about between 60 and 70% of the working population. There are some jobs that still have to be done face-to-face, you know, frontline and all of that. But those that could transition to remote working, it worked well. There was a lot of focus on systems, platforms, connectivity, and getting all that in place. And a lot of that has been tried and tested. I think where organizations are now is they're looking at what this future operating model looks like, what sort of type of blended will work, what employees will be in all the time, what employees will be in part of the time, and how do you make that work in terms of collaboration? When you're having meetings, are some face to face, are some people in the room, some people, and getting all of that. So there's a big focus on the whole people dimension now, and how that works. How do you lead virtual teams? So lots of new challenges around leadership, where you have a sort of a distributed workforce, and I suppose what we are saying to clients is don't think currently, think 2 years ahead post the pandemic, and what does that model look like? And that's where we're getting to in relation to where there's a lot of our work at the moment.
And where do you think organizations, so historically, obviously, we're all used to being pretty much tied to an office location for, you know, the majority of our time, at least, unless we're out, obviously, with clients, etc. Where do you think this lands going forward? What considerations are you talking to your clients about as they predict what's going to be, where they need to be in 2 years' time?
I suppose I would say it depends on the organization, first of all, in terms of what they do. But I think where it lands is that there will be a mix of, and some organizations are using different groupings. So team A, team B might be in different days of the week. I think some organizations are looking at 2 days, 1 week, 3 days, another week. And so there will be probably more external, more home working than within the office. And that's down to two very simple things based on a lot of our work over the last year or so, and that's productivity and place. When we have worked with clients generally during the pandemic looking to shape their future operating model, productivity has actually increased for quite a lot of teams, particularly in a lot of the service organizations. And that's often down to less downtime, travel, commute, people able to focus more, less distractions. And the place where they did that, mainly being at home, actually was irrelevant in terms of that. So there's a bit about getting the days and structure. I think organizations secondly are starting to look at the benefits package in terms of support for home workers. I think there's a big issue around health and safety, around GDPR data. And I think, you know, there's a number of areas that are still a little bit gray, and that's payroll and taxes. So you may have an organization, may have 500 people, but, you know, 10% may choose to work outside of Ireland. So what does that mean in terms of tax, shadow payrolls? So it's not just purely on a people and change, productivity, operating model. You need to bring in some of those other factors, and that's what organizations are looking at. I think the big challenge we are seeing is around organizations that bring in lots of new people. So that whole induction, and where there's an element of training, it's difficult to make that work remotely, to get that sort of transfer of skills. That peer-to-peer learning is not working as well as it would have been maybe within the office type environment. And I think secondly, real collaboration is difficult to make happen remotely, where there's a spontaneity, where people get together and talk through things. And that's a mixture of office structure, but it's a mixture of how we actually make that work going forward. So we're doing looking at that and how you make that work, because, you know, the last thing people want is you bring everyone in to the work environment, or when they're in the work environment, and actually they go back and put on their headphones and they're doing virtual meetings. So that there's no benefit really then having them back into the workplace, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. I think organizations are trying to get that clarity in, as to why you go to the office. As you say, it seems ridiculous to mandate 2 days a week or 3 days a week, a commute, yeah. And then you do exactly what you would have done at home. Slight pivot, Patrick, the great resignation. We're seeing a lot about it in the media. It's a narrative that is in organizations. From your own experience and your dealings with your clients, is it a real thing at the moment?
I think it is a real thing at the moment. And it's become, I think, more real in the last 6 to 9 months. And it originally started, as you know, in the US, the terminology. And I suppose what we're seeing, even within Grant Thornton and indeed with her clients, it's that mid-tier manager level, you know, that age grouping often between 30 and 45. So it's that group. And we're seeing them, you know, I think what's happening is there is a bit of pent-up demand. I think there's been a year before that when people were reluctant to move because there was a lot of uncertainty about work and you know, how organizations would cope with the pandemic. So I think you've pent up demand, you know, from maybe people that were thinking about career plans before that, maybe not moving on. I think there's something about an element of people being burnt out as well, and people are maybe reflecting on those that would have been off, whether it was pup or furlough or whatever, you know, have had time to reflect and maybe want to change in career. And I think people are now, there's the burnt out element I talked about, but also people are now starting to think, you know, with the new opportunities around hybrid working, what is it I want to do? And there's a real challenge here for organizations in looking at that whole talent management and how they address that. And that needs to be high up the senior team agenda or you'll be caught out. And we are seeing organizations, you know, having to sort of do a rear guard action, really, to try and sort of address where they've had people hand in their notice and then have been sort of left without suitable teams and resource and managers.
So what sort of things can organizations do so they don't have to do that reactionary work when someone hands in their notice? What would be some good best practice?
Yeah, well, I think organizations, well, first of all, I think they need to overhaul how they look at strategic workforce planning. And to me, in strategic workforce planning, there are four different things. First of all, how do you attract people? So what's your employer value proposition? And that needs to be much sharper and clearer in terms of what you bring as an employer to potential employees. And maybe talk about that a little bit later. So there's how you attract people. Then the second area is how you actually deploy. So that brings in the whole aspect of the workforce operating model, how people work together, work across teams, work across locations. So attract, deploy, and then develop. And organizations now need to think about career pathways. They need to think about skills. They need to think about fungibility, which is a term doesn't come up too often, but how people can work into different roles and get opportunities to do that. So that development of staff and providing skills and continual professional development, whether it's apprentices or senior teams, really important. And then the fourth area of strategic workforce planning is retention. And retention is something that's really, you know, retaining employees and being able to sort of hold on to your team and develop your team is really, really important, because when you look at the costs of recruitment, retraining, particularly that group that are impacted the most, that mid-tier management or mid-tier, you know, workers, that's the group that are very expensive to retrain. And expensive to recruit if you take agency costs. So those four areas around strategic workforce planning, getting that right and strategic.
Yeah, it's interesting as you were outlining them there, Patrick. I mean, if you're not developing people as well, you're not you don't actually have successors for when those sort of mid-tier people you're describing are going. So it's a double whammy almost. You mentioned EVP there, so 2 years on in this COVID pandemic, has EVP changed? What does a good one look like now?
Yeah, I think it has changed. And I think your EVP will actually be different depending on the type of employee that you're targeting. So I think you need to look at your graduates, new joiners coming in, you know, to train and develop. And not only do you need to provide career pathways, but everything is now around flexible working. And those younger employees will vote with their feet. I think we also need to look at how we remunerate, compensate those employees in terms of all their benefits. So the whole benefit process around maybe helping with home utility costs, all of that is changing. So the whole sort of tax benefits package needs to change. I think also organizations need to look at their values. One of the things that has been come to the fore very much during the last couple of years is cultures. The culture within organizations, subcultures, have had to change and will change reflecting this new type of workforce. So organizations need to sort of think about what they're doing to develop their culture and how that needs to be reflected in their value proposition, because that's really important to that grouping. And I think, you know, what's the organization's view on sustainability, on climate change? Those are things that now need to be upfront and are part and parcel. And then it brings in the whole diversity inclusion aspect and some of the changes that are coming in terms of gender, payroll reporting, variances and all of that. All of that now needs to be thought through. And then if you bring that to the more senior group, that all needs to be brought into that, but also individuals are now looking for, you know, the pathways for progression to work in different locations, qualifications, And some of those things would have not really, it have been very much more what the package is, holidays, and then I'll take my chance on developing myself. But that needs to be much more clear, I think, in terms of the EVP.
Having worked in recruitment for a long time in Dublin, it's more than just, is there parking that now?
Absolutely.
It's a bigger question.
Yeah, and parking actually, believe it or not, is now one of those things that's not maybe referenced. You know, I had someone 5 or 6 weeks ago and said, what was the, you know, they want to know, was there an opportunity to do a sabbatical, like after a couple of years, which you would never have asked at an interview to try and get into the organization. And secondly, what was my view on around working, you know, from sort of say a mainland European location over the summer, if they were visiting family and friends. So those are some of the things that are now coming into the discussion.
It's interesting. I think some organizations haven't got around the fact that the candidate is interviewing you as well as you interviewing the candidate. And what you're saying there is that, yeah, I mean, God, you'd never have thought of asking a question like that 20 years ago. You mentioned a lot of stuff there. I won't repeat it all, but things like culture, sustainability, D&I, how do you incorporate that into your talent acquisition process in your view, so that it is meaningful and it, you know, it's not just, you know, words on a website or on a pamphlet? How do you think you can show really top talent that this is what ingrained in your DNA of your organization?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it's more than just a website, on the website. And it's more than just having those, your values up in your reception. I think, well, the first thing is potential joiners now talk to each other. They go on to things like Glassdoor. They will check out via social media where the organization, such as ourselves, maybe have been involved in producing reports in various industries. So that there's definitely much more research. I think as an organization, you really need to walk the talk in this. So it's about the first part is internally, so how you address some of these challenges internally. So and that could be gender makeup, balance at the senior level. So how many female partners, directors, are you involved in the annual, you know, pride parade, things like things in terms of website, but also talking to each other. I think they're expecting organizations to have a point of view, so that there will be a focus on, you know, what sort of committees do you have, what are you doing in sustainability. For example, Grant Thornton in the roof gardens and custom and City Quay, you know, are doing the bird nesting and some things like that, and then they're sent, you know, we've all been sent out at different times seeds to grow within our gardens and things like that. So there's a whole sort of how would you describe it, sort of sea change in the way we embrace a lot of that, and that needs to be reflected in how we communicate with our employees. I think also the external perspective is, what are we doing to help change this externally, and what is Grant Thornton doing and other organizations doing on climate change? Do they have a point of view on sustainability? Do they have a point of view on diversity and stuff like that, and how you're represented on external organizations and groupings? So I think they look for both. In terms of culture change, it's really identifying where the gaps are, what you're needing to do, and I think that leadership shadow from the top team is really, really important, and how that drives the behavior within the rest of the organization is really important.
I couldn't agree more. It's sort of leveled the playing field, in my opinion, for smaller organizations. I think, you know, over the last 10 years in say in Dublin, just as where I'm based, you know, you had your Googles, your Facebooks, your the big multinationals who could, you know, throw food at you and booze and parties and all of that sort of stuff. That's sort of no longer as big a part of that EVP. And it strikes me, and I'd love to get your opinion, that now a smaller organization can give a 4-day work week, or you know, can be more dynamic in terms of quickly flexing. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's something around agility where an organization can respond very, very quickly to changing employee needs, reflecting what where the organization is going. And I think, you know, the larger organizations and those maybe in the digital technology, social media sector, there was a lot made out of, you know, the free lunches, access to the gym, and great working environment. But that's less relevant these days. Now, Google did recently, just I think it was a number of weeks ago, talk about how their future office would look. But I think there's much more now about actually on my relationship with the organization and how it responds to what's happening within the external environment, but also how it responds to what's happening in terms of, you know, the labor force and what's happening with workers. And, you know, I did an article before Christmas on the changing face of HR. And that's all about understanding your people, being, you know, considerate, taking cognizance of what they want, supporting them through this change, because there is a massive change. And I think where the smaller organizations, back to your point, they have more agility to actually do things, make those decisions quickly. The super tankers are great, but actually when you try and bring in some change, it can take a while for that to happen, and people then have either moved on or they're slightly disenfranchised. So I think there is a level playing field, much more. We're also seeing that actually, you know, in professional services where I am, years ago, people would have maybe left an organization to go to another big four. What we're now seeing is people are actually leaving to join maybe smaller organizations, startups, because they've been able to help shape the organization, the structure and that. And that's where what's happening is you're seeing that in distributed leadership. Talent now want to be able to sort of lead, to be empowered, to make decisions. And sometimes the smaller organization with that home working environment can actually provide that. But the DNA of the organization holds them together. That's probably a long-winded answer, Declan.
No. It's
what you're saying is absolutely right, and the office infrastructure is no longer the number one attraction. You know,
just one last question, Patrick, if I may. Where is the opportunity as it currently sits in our current working environment? Where is the opportunity for most companies that they haven't realized yet?
I think the opportunity is, first of all, that the size of the workforce has probably nearly doubled, because there are people that now can work remotely that would have been disenfranchised previously from, you know, commuting 3 or 4 days a week into an office in Dublin. So there's a lot of talent out there that's maybe untapped in terms of maybe working fathers or mothers, who previously thought, you know, this is difficult to do. And some of those people may have in the past have taken themselves out of the workforce for 15 or 20 years, bringing up children, et cetera, like that. I think the second part of that opportunity is Ireland can attract talent from anywhere in the world in the new model. Now, that does go against some of the challenges around FDI looking at IDA and some of that, where it's all about jobs in Ireland. But I think Irish companies now can attract that wider talent pool anywhere, really. And I think the third opportunity is around that collaboration. If we can make that collaboration work, where we can bring teams from the Americas, from Asia, working together digitally, remotely, you know, a lot of companies in sort of with the core industries are only starting to see the advantages of that now. And I do think, and the health service executive would be one of my clients. But there is actually a real opportunity, say, within the medical field around online diagnostics, video consultations. A lot of that actually is a great opportunity to how we streamline a lot of what we deliver, whether it's healthcare, professional services, you know, and I think those are some of the major opportunities going forward that HR need to drive. They need to have that seat at the top table, because often they're not maybe listened to as well as they should be listened to. But that's changing the whole future of work. And remember, it's all about productivity and place. And place doesn't have to be a traditional factory or office.
Brilliant. Patrick Gallen is People and Change Consulting Partner for Grant Thornton. Patrick, thanks a million for joining us today.
Pleasure, Declan. Thank you, and have a good day.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.